Okay, with Dr. Don Carpenter, Interwoven is the short film, play the documentary film festival. Really interesting film. This is your first film, correct?
It is, yeah.
So I know this this subject matter means a lot to you, but I'm just curious because making a film is a huge enterprise. I'm just curious what finally motivated you to make a film.
Well, we've been doing podcasts for years. I am the director of the Solidarity Economy Workshop at Georgetown. So I'm a financial ethicist. I spent a career on Wall Street, and then I wanted to tell economic stories. But I didn't want to tell the bad ones. It's like there are plenty of investigative journalists that just like tell all of the bad stuff in the world. I wanted to uplift and tell inspirational stories. And so I started a podcast called What Does It Profit? It comes from the scripture reference, "What does it profit a man to gain the whole world but lose his soul?" So we wanted to tell uplifting stories that could inspire people to either mimic or say, "Hey, I had no idea that could be done." And so we've been super successful in the podcast, which is all audio. And we thought, okay, the world is begging for more visuals, and said, okay, what's in our back catalog that could take us to places that could bring us beautiful pictures? And we thought, well, the mountains of North Carolina, and so that's where we started. And truthfully, if we were going to make a film, we're like, okay. What's our budget? And we're like, okay, can we drive there from Washington, D.C.? We're like, yep, we can do that on the road. So that's kind of why we started with that story.
So did you do a story this story on a podcast previously?
We told the story of Material Return, which is one of the enterprises of the Industrial Commons, which is the bigger entity that's told in Interwoven. So when you see the character of Bobby Carswell in the documentary, he's the one who tells the story of when they bring socks into Material Return, they grind them up, reweave them, and they become socks again.
Yeah.
That's one enterprise, and that's the story that we told in the podcast. So the podcast was maybe 15 minutes, and so that was, how we focused the story there. But for us, if we wanted to share the story, we thought, well, let's use it as an opportunity to tell a bigger story about deindustrialization and what could be hopeful. Because truthfully, we just came out of a really crappy presidential election where it just completely divided our country. And we're like, you know what? There are a lot of more ways that we're all similar than we're different.
Yeah,
And
100%.
so we said the story that's happening in North Carolina, you could tell with similar themes in small towns all over the place.
Yeah, and it didn't, I guess it didn't hurt. It was a swing state too, I guess, too, right?
Oh, there's this whole political undertone. When we were
Yeah.
making this film, actually, in the middle of making it, Molly Hemstreet, who's one of the characters in the film, was very, very concerned. She's like, this is a challenging time in North Carolina. Maybe we don't want to do this.
Yeah.
We want to be careful. And I totally respect Molly on so many levels. And so we wanted to be very careful when we made this film.
All right, so there's a lot to tackle here, but let's talk about like the history because the manufacturing industry, obviously it becomes a political topic, but it's a dying industry for various reasons. For like obviously free trade, but also too, we live in a different world. We don't need to manufacture as much as we used to. So this is sort of the backdrop of this thriving town that basically I grew up in. I grew up in Niagara Falls, like which is cl close. My dad was a GM executive, so it was close to a lot of plants, a GM plants, and with Windsor and Detroit. So there was a lot of middle class economy. It was like everybody who was middle class had a job. Everybody was pretty comfortable, relaxed, and then of course that changed in the 2000s, and that's sort of what is happening in this film. And then obviously they're trying to revive it with the co-ops, and that's what your film is about. So that's and obviously it's in a swing state as well. So it's a key important story, I guess, what how we can kind of people could transform this dying industry, I guess, right?
Yeah, and it looks different in different places. So what works in this little corner of North Carolina won't look exactly the same somewhere else because every community has its own story.
Yeah.
But I think the bigger message in Interwoven is that communities thrive when they realize that they're interwoven. The people have that connection by being in community, and we're all in it together. I think it was Jimmy Warlick, the character from the Workers' Legacy Foundation in the film, who said, if one succeeds, we all succeed. It's not like success is like there's a pie and there's only so much success we can carve up. It's like you want to root everybody on.
Yeah, that sounds like socialism. I'm totally kidding, but
Yeah, but you know what? That's It's interesting that you say that because people think that that's what quote unquote socialism
yeah,
means.
exactly.
Socialism just, that's not what it means. I root everybody on. It's like I want everybody to be
Yeah,
successful.
as a Canadian, I always, when Obama was president, who was a total centralist from a Canadian standpoint, and they always called him like a communist and socialist, we would laugh because it was like, this is, he is so far from a socialist. Like, he was a centralist, like a total centralist. I always found that funny. But anyways, because it's a good talking point, I guess, right? But people like what you talk about is fantastic. It's like unionization, everything like that. But that, because what you just described, it becomes a dirty word though for people, because
Oh yeah, I just gave the film. We just showed the film in Croatia on Thursday. You're like, how did the film get shown in Croatia? Part of what I have done over the past number of years is work on a special program at the Vatican that brings these solidarity economy issues out to the world. And there was a convening in Croatia. They showed the film, and I gave a talk about cooperatives. And somebody asked that question about, are they socialists? I said, it's a way to organize business activity where the workers have a agency, just as Molly Hemstreet talks in the film, but they also share in the prosperity of the business. It's like, think about it. It's like, I participate in the stock market. I just don't control the management activities at Apple. But sometimes I'd like to, but I don't have that kind of agency or control, and I don't work there. These are for people who don't have access. So this is, in their way, the ability to say, I'm going to own my own productivity. I think it's super cool. My parents were small business owners, and I see how powerful that is.
Is powerful, and like I like your stock market analogy, because you are technically a shareholder of, say, Apple, for example. So it kind of is a co-op in many regards, I guess, right? But because but at the same time,
You're
like,
owning
you
a piece of it, yeah.
get a piece of it. But this card, like, is, I always, like, my worry was, like, say I'm a small business owner, there always needs to be like a, maybe I'm wrong on this point, but there always needs to be a leader. There always needs to be somebody who's like kind of like driving a community, a committee of leadership. In my experience, never works, but I could be wrong.
Can I tell you something? That's exactly the biggest reason why cooperatives fail, is that there's kind of this analysis paralysis that can happen where but either there's infighting or there's the inability to kind of make decisions. And so that's one of the weaknesses in that type of business model. But think about how successful the co-op grocers are. Think about how successful the co-op babysitting services are. The credit unions, I think there are millions of people out there that don't realize that they're supporting cooperatives by going to their local credit union. That's a cooperative.
But there's small scale and large scales, I guess, right? And
Yeah, you ever hear of REI, the outdoor company?
no.
Yeah, they sell outdoor gear. They are a cooperative. Land O'Lakes, they sell butter and dairy products. They're a cooperative. Ace Hardware, the hardware store chain, they are a cooperative. They're big companies, and people just don't know about it.
Technically, the Green Bay Packers are this billion-dollar
Yes,
organization or
yeah, they're
cooperative.
nonprofit. Yeah,
So, I guess, like, it could work out, but I guess, like, it's
You're
like,
ready for our next films. Yeah, we've got
sorry.
two more. I said you're ready for our next films. We've got two more in the hopper.
Well, what are those about?
Yeah, the next one, our working title is called Mining the Sun. It's about bringing solar energy into West Virginia. And you can imagine the controversy or the dissonance with the coal industry. But it's an incredible story about modern day extraction. So the history in West Virginia has been first it started with extracting natural resources, started with salt and then timber and then coal. And now modern day extraction is what does a decimated area do when it's incredibly impoverished? They try to bring in new business activity. Well, there are all of these incredible incentives to bring in data centers now. Well, data centers are very extractive business entities for a number of different reasons, which we don't need to go into now. But one of the things that's a huge problem is that they're very limited in terms of jobs. So they'll be, for very short periods of time, they build these mega facilities, but then those jobs go away. And then what happens to the communities when those big multinational companies don't have to pay taxes? And they don't, most of those facilities are highly automated, so there are no long-term jobs. And so it's just yet another form of extraction. But there's this entrepreneurial group of people that created this company called Solar Holler, and they've used an incredible incentive, environmental incentive, to create a whole new industry. And they were very, very successful. And I wanted to tell that very successful story. Again, we did it in the podcast. 2 years later, those incentives are gone. And it's no longer economically viable to put solar on your house in West Virginia. So it's a question of you had an opportunity to build a whole new industry. And this is what you decided to do, is to go back to being an extractive colony. And so it's kind of a sad story. So we're still working on kind of how we're going to tell that story. But it's I think it's an important story. But then I have a super positive one. And this is why tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. I'm on a plane to Chicago. And so we're telling this incredible story about the nexus of what it means to have a healthy community financially and what it means for health. And so studies show that if you have poor economic quality in a community, you have poor health outcomes. And so excuse me, Rush Hospital in Chicago, it's an inner city hospital on the west side of Chicago, has invested in the development of three major economic development projects in its general location of surrounding the hospital. And they have done so for the express purpose of improving the health outcomes. And the chief medical officer tells me that those investments actually increase health outcomes more than some of the best technology that they put in the hospital itself. And it's done extraordinary things and in ways and dimensions that you wouldn't have imagined. And so that story is called an anchor strat. Economic development terms is called an anchor strategy. So it's using hospitals or institutions of higher ed to use their procurement activities, whether it's in what they buy or the services that they procure for their operations, to change the economic output of the communities where they're located. In this case, to further the mission of the hospital itself, which is to improve the health outcomes of its community. And what spurred all of this on was a very disturbing statistic. Within, I don't know if you've ever been to Chicago, but their subway system is called the Loop. Within two loop stops of the hospital, there's a 10-year longevity gap, meaning within two stops, you're going to lose 10 years off of your life expectancy because the economic deterioration and quality of life between those two neighborhoods.
That's amazing. That's an amazing stat. Wow.
So we're going to tell that story. And what's
So
wonderful about it is that the doctor that started all of this is the grandfather of this movement called anchor strategies of using these institutions to change. They created an association in 2017, and now there are 70 hospital systems around the country that are trying aspects of this, but this Chicago hospital is the farthest along. And so we are going to make this film in hopes of teaching other hospital systems and to inspire them to do this. But if we can raise money to tell the longer story, we want to tell why this is important, because we all think that life expectancy is going up. We're living longer, which is true if you're wealthy, but it's not true if you look at the data. If you're middle class or lower class or poor in this country, your life expectancy is going down.
Which makes sense because of health and because you don't have socialized medicine, all the it's
Oh, it's not even just the health care. Like, do you get your annual checkups and all that? It's like, do you
no
have access to healthy food?
yeah that's
Do
what I
you
meant.
have,
Like it's like there's never just one thing, but it's like but it's
yeah,
that
so
if you, it's
you're right.
bad food is cheaper, it's as simple as that, right? And healthy food is more expensive, so and it's more
So,
it, yeah and you have yeah there's so many factors. It seems like you're onto something, because the way you're describing like this story and the way you describe those two films, is that you're telling individual or kind of micro stories within a macro, these like gigantic macro themes, right? And it's a good way to tackle these subjects, because as you know, if you make a film about the stock market, it's great. It's like as an economist like yourself, it's like it's too extreme to even discuss on a 90-minute film or a feature film. So you could tell these individual stories, and it makes all these, you put in these pieces. So I think you're onto something. If this is your first film, I think you created a really great structure here with this 24-minute short film, because you brought in the character, you brought in the town. Like we know that it becomes a character in itself. We feel the town, and then you bring in the individual characters, and you bring in the group settings, and it really shows us where we are in Americana, and basically in a nutshell. So amazing, like for the first film, I thought it was fantastic. So, and I'm
Did
not
you
just
see
saying
the
that.
dedic did you see the dedication at the end of the film? Did you notice it?
Is that your grandmother?
Yeah, she was an orphan in the 40s, and they required them to support themselves in the orphanage. And so they put an 11-year-old in a textile factory, and she worked in those mills.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but
No, it's a really bad thing. You go into those textile mills, and it is so
you
loud.
showed us, yeah, and
You,
that it's yeah. No, I meant like it's like I don't know if
yeah.
they were like helping her create a job, a work ethic, or
Oh, no, because what was she not doing at
sleep.
11? She wasn't sleeping. She wasn't going to school. I'm all for work. Are you kidding? My doctoral dissertation is, what does God have to say about the nature of work and responsibilities of wealth? I'm all about work. And I think work brings an inherent dignity to all of us.
Another thing you added in your film as well is that you show us different generations. So you show the young woman and then the older. So you're seeing different perspectives of how people are, handling the world that they're in, right? Like I just talked about, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and it's amazing how different it is. To when I'm raising my kids now, it's like incredible. So
Yeah, we're peers.
yeah, and so yeah, and so basically, and then where did you grab? You have all kinds of stock footage as well, and you kind of
Oh,
show
yeah.
where did you find all the stock footage? You got Ross Perot way
Oh,
back. Shout out to the 90s there.
yeah, that was from C-SPAN. We went to archives in North Carolina. NC State has a wonderful graduate program in textiles, and so we went to the archives there. There's a historical society in Burke County, in Morganton, and so we got some footage from there, and a lot of pictures. Just so it was like the Ken Burns style, where you go into the
You
pictures.
had like even the portrait, you kind of yeah you went in there, like you had that montage where you kind of yeah the nostalgic montage.
And it was great. One of the pictures that I took made it in there, and it was that at the opening sequence when we use James McMurtry's song "Can't Make It Here Anymore," it talks. We tried to syncopate the lyrics of the song to the visuals, and they talk about rusted out tracks. And I remember laying on the ground at the innovation site of the Industrial Commons. There were some old railroad tracks. And we didn't know about McMurtry or anything. I was just out. The cinematographers were doing their thing, and I'm there with my iPhone, and I'm laying on the ground on my stomach, and I'm like, this looks like an awesome picture. And I just took a picture, and I'm like, it ended up in the film, and I'm like, okay, that's my one visual contribution to the film.
So tell me about the story, like this the structure of the film. Like, did you know when you started interviewing the going to the town and interviewing people and taking shots, candid shots of like the atmosphere in the inside the factory, etc. Did you know what the story was going to be? Like,
Oh
where did
gosh.
you write a script or?
How many filmmakers have you interviewed, or first-time filmmakers have you interviewed? I'm saying that just hypothetically.
Yeah.
It's like, no, we had no idea what the hell we were
Okay.
doing. So if I had done it the way that I'm doing it now, totally different, because the film would have been made a lot faster. It took us about a
Sure.
year to do it. It would have been a lot faster if we knew what, I mean, we knew the general story we wanted to tell. But the problem is, we didn't know if we were going to use a narrator. Our biggest problem was, were we going to use a narrator to push the story along, or were we going to just like do interviews and just make the movie in editing, which
Yeah.
is what we did. So in post, we put together the whole story. So like technically how we did it was that we did individual interviews and then put it through transcription, and then I went through and read everything. And then again, I kind of came from the podcasting experience,
Yeah.
and then I just cut and said, okay, these timestamps, they kind of flow together. And then we kind of visually went in and we're like, oh gosh, we can't do that because it doesn't fit. So it's there, it, that took a lot of
Dang.
time, and that was not the most efficient way to do it. And so I learned a
Yeah. That
lot
said, this
in,
was your film school, and
yes.
you have a successful film out of film school, so.
So that was a challenge. But it was fun kind of scouting locations, like the location for James Benton. He was the labor scholar. Was actually the Alpine Mill, which is the oldest mill in Morganton, and it's now condos. And so we didn't have permission to go in there, so I just kind of scammed my way in. There's a guy,
Still making 101 right there. You
had a
you've already
scam. I just
succeeding. Yeah.
Yeah, I said, can you hold the door open for us? And some maintenance guy held the
Sure.
door open. We later went and got permission, but and got a release. But some of that stuff was going on.
The great thing, what you did really amazingly well, and from somebody who watches obviously a lot of documentary films, is that your interview staging is fantastic. So, well, not only is it shot well, and you have different shots and you kind of cut back and forth, but everything thematic, what they're talking about thematically sets up what like is the background. So basically it's thematically visual, and everything kind of matches and makes sense. So I'm sure that was conscious on your part, but
Oh, yeah, that was
fantastic job.
definitely conscious, like
Yeah.
having the textile waste in the
Oh,
background.
that's a fantastic image. Yeah. And then she's
Walter
out,
was.
the one young woman's outside, like,
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And then,
I
yeah.
love the two musical songs. So I mentioned James McMurtry. I don't know if you know who he is, but for those who are into that genre of music, he's very well known. And when we told him about the story we wanted to tell, he's very sympathetic to that the whole all the themes in the film. And he said, take it. He's like, if my music can be used to help tell the story, just use it. So he didn't charge us for it. He just said, make a good film. He said, we'll do our best. And then the great one at the end was they're Catholic priests, they're Dominican priests
Yeah.
who make bluegrass music. And so we wanted to, and we really went around and around. We're like, do we score the whole film? Because there's so many, I went through the archives at the Smithsonian Folklife, and we found there's a woman, I think her name is Elizabeth Cotton. She's a very well, if you know bluegrass music, you would know who she is. She's like the grandmother of all of this, and she has some beautiful music. And we thought about you. They gave us permission to use it, and we tried to weave it in, and we're like, you know. We could do it, but it's like we wanted the silence of it. And so maybe in the next film, if I had another 6 months to work on it,
Yeah.
we probably would have found a beautiful way to use it, but we were
Yeah.
just like, okay,
That's another thing with filmmaking. You don't finish a film, you abandon it. You have to move on to the next thing because you could spend your whole life on it, right? So,
Well, that was an important thing I was okay with.
because you want to. So then you kind of learned, like, did you think it was going to be 24 minutes? Did you want it to be longer? Did you want it, like, I'm assuming you want to make a feature film, right? So.
No. We wanted a short.
No, I mean in the future. In the
Oh, in
future,
the
yeah.
future. You know, I like these. Well, now that I'm learning about what happens on the distribution end,
Sure.
yeah, now I want to make a feature film. We've been working in this 24-minute space, less than 30-minute space in podcasting. So I was very familiar with telling stories in that range. So it's like my comfort zone. I think right now it's really a budget question. If we could make a beautiful feature, it's about, I would rather, budget issues, I would say make a beautiful short. But if we had the budget, make a beautiful feature. But if we had less budget, don't make a less beautiful feature, if you
Yeah,
know what I mean.
gotcha.
So wish me luck. I mentioned I'm going to Chicago
Yeah.
tomorrow, and one of my meetings is with someone who could write the whole check. So it probably doesn't make sense for one person to write the whole check. I really want him to have a party at his house to bring in a family of friends who then could help us on the back end in other ways, because I think
Yeah.
it's better to have more people involved.
Like a
But
co-op. Yeah.
yeah.
So you don't have one executive producer, you have more than
No, but you know, that's the thing. One of the things that I did when before we even did this, I had actually contemplated another project. And I mentioned that I showed the film in Croatia. And I did it because I was involved with a project at the Vatican called the Economy of Francesco. This was with Pope Francis. And there was an ask. I did a podcast episode to tell the story of why Pope Francis set this economic project up. And it was something that we did during COVID. And they said, well, will you guys make a film about it? And we had contemplated making a documentary with five vignettes telling stories of how this movement was flourishing around the world. And I'm telling you, that would have been a feature big. That was way too
Yeah.
ambitious for someone who had never made a film. And I was, you know, I came from a business background. I'm like, no way, that was just too much. But in doing that, I had the foresight to create a fund at the Community Foundation of in Los Angeles, and so there's a film fund there that has some money in it. And so, you know, there's a place for some more projects. So if there's
There's so,
anybody out
like,
there.
with your background and what you know and your experience and education, there's so many film. I got like 10 film ideas for you that you can do, right? So it will never end.
Well, you know how to find me.
Yeah.
Or anybody who's
Well, look
listening,
at
you know.
now. Every day you can look, just pick up your New York Times and or whatever in social media. Like, this is an interesting, obviously, without saying names or what's
Yeah.
happening, it's pretty obvious that from an economic standpoint, as a Canadian, tariffs and, like, it's an interesting time. Let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah. Interesting is a euphemism, you
Yeah.
know. Yeah, it's crazy. I remember my daughters. I have two daughters. They're now grown, and
Yeah.
when they were little, I went into their school, and it was like, take your parent to school. Like, what do they do? And I
Yeah.
was an investment banker. And it's like, how do you explain that to 7-year-olds?
Yeah.
And so I said I was a storyteller. I told the stories between those who needed capital and those who had excess capital to invest. And so, I guess really, and if somebody asks me what I do a lot of different things, but in my heart, I'm a storyteller.
And you're a born producer, let's put it that way. And I just want to add that, by the way, great website that you guys created. But your team that you put together, because it can't be just you, right? You know
Oh,
that.
it definitely, it
Your
takes a village.
cinematographer, your editor, your sound, great sound design for a documentary film. That's so key to documentary, well, films in general, but you found a really great sound engineer.
Yeah,
And
we won best sound at the Indie Vegas Film
oh yeah,
Festival.
for sure, 100%. Like I can, I it's just a really well put together film, and you are a pretty, you could see you're a producer, and that's what getting funding is. So you just described what how to get funding, right?
Yeah.
So I think that I
Well,
just
that's what deal makers do, right? Yes.
that's exactly that's exactly it. And then, but
Yeah.
you have a great story to tell. You have an important story to tell without getting. And another thing too, I want to add before we finish off, you're not pretentious about it. You're just telling these the story, and you're like, these are these people, this is what they do. You're not, you don't have a there's no, there's an agenda, of course, but there's no like obvious kind of like, this is what you should be thinking. Like, how dare you not think this way? It's just, it's really, really, really well done storytelling.
Yeah, well, I mean, it comes from my all of this comes from my view to life, and which is informed by my faith tradition, and it's all rooted in this idea that we should all have agency in our own lives. You know, who am I to tell you what to do? You know, it's your life. My job is to be the best, you know, Dawn I can be. Your
Yeah.
job is, her
But
job
be
is to
kind.
just
Try to be
be
kind
kind.
and have
Yes.
compassion and understand
Yeah.
it's not about you. I
Right,
could throw
right,
those in too.
right.
Yeah.
You must be a parent.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, it's like, what do you think I'm doing what I'm doing, right? It's like I was a lucky kid growing up, and I realized that the world's not lucky. I just the world's not fair. And I was the one of the lucky ones, so
Yeah, I could
yeah.
say the same. Yeah, I'm the adoptive mom of two Russian orphans. It's
Wow.
like I, the world is not a fair place.
No, it's not. And we just get lucky. But
Yeah.
my kids have no idea. They will eventually, but it's so
Yeah, they must be little.
happy. Yeah. Well, yeah. 8 and 6. So yeah.
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah. Just I just, it's just about happiness. Be happy. Right. I know it's, these are all kind of like cliche lines, but if you're happy, then everything else kind of takes care of itself.
Yeah. Mine is be grateful.
Be grateful. Okay, that's good too. Yeah.
Yeah.
All
Yeah.
right.
Well, I'm grateful that you guys chose, our film, and
Yeah.
we're super happy about
It's
that. I
great.
mean,
I can't honestly keep in touch. I can't wait to see what you do next. I think you're onto something. And I think there's so many of these little nugget stories, and I think that people need to watch. Obviously, like it's great for people to watch these things because we get so caught up in the crap and the mess of like store of the news, because it's all, they're just trying to sell papers or sell clicks or whatever. And these are the stories that need to be told.
your lips to God's ears.
All right, well, let's talk soon.
Okay, sounds